Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
So Nick Cordero, this guy is 41 years old. He has an 11-month-old son named Elvis. His wife, Amanda Klutz, is a former Radio City Rockette, you know, one of the dancers and singers and whatnot. He is a major Broadway star. And on April 1st, at Cedars-Sinai Medical Center in Los Angeles, they sedated him, knocked him out, because before they can stick a tube down your throat to help you breathe, they have to make you unconscious. They put him into basically a medically induced coma, and he just came out of it a day or so ago. 41 years old, peak of health, right? The guy is a Broadway performer. His wife is a dancer. They are athletes. In fact, his wife texted this out or tweeted this out. She said, "This disease does not only affect old people. This is real. A perfectly healthy 41-year-old man. Bring awareness to his story. Stay home. Follow the guidelines." Nick Cordero. By the way, in the middle of the 5 weeks that he was unconscious, he got a horrible blood clot in one of his legs. Apparently, one of the things that this virus does particularly well or particularly nasty is it causes our blood to just start clotting up in all kinds of ways that are unpredictable. This is happening to children. They're getting these red blisters all over themselves. Sometimes it happens on their feet. They're calling it COVID toe. It's happening, you know, it happens in our lungs, and it apparently is the cause of COVID-based pneumonia. It's happening in our brains, and it's producing strokes. It's happening in our heart, and it's causing heart attacks. We're seeing very substantial increases in heart attacks and strokes in areas that have high levels of COVID that are not even diagnosed as COVID, but apparently they are. And so what happened to him was he got one of these god-awful blood clots. He was on kidney dialysis. He had two mini strokes. He had a temporary pacemaker put in to prevent him from having a heart attack, and they had to remove his right leg, all while he was unconscious. This Broadway star, 41 years old, just woke up to discover he's missing a leg, but at least he's still alive. This is something that we all need to take seriously. You know, they're taking it seriously over at the Murdoch Empire. Fox News just notified all their employees that the earliest that they will allow people to come back to work, to stop working from home, is June 15th. So all the Fox shows are being done from people's houses, but they're telling you, you should get back to work. And now you've got the Department of Labor, Eugene Scalia's Department of Labor, Donald Trump's Department of Labor, telling the states, giving specific advice to the states, that now that we have ended the national state of emergency, it expired last week, now that we have ended the national state of emergency, and you and your state can end your state of emergency, the people who are on unemployment right now no longer qualify for unemployment. And if they refuse to go back to work because they're afraid of getting sick and ending up like Nick Cordero, then tough. They literally laid this out. This was the advice coming from Eugene Scalia. States are strongly encouraged to request employers to provide information when workers refuse to return to their jobs because they're afraid of dying. In other words, don't just cut off their unemployment benefits, prosecute them for unemployment fraud. Meanwhile, this is really sad. Betty Mugina, 47, and a female colleague, they were both working in the trains, a railway ticket worker in London. And some guy came up to them, and they were wearing masks. Some guy came up to them and said, you know, basically ranting about how this is all, you know, a hoax and all this kind of stuff. And he spit on them, both of them. Belly is her name. Belly just died of coronavirus, COVID-19. She leaves behind a husband and an 11-year-old daughter. She's 47 years old. Her female colleague is in the hospital right now with COVID. This guy spit on them, and they both got infected. This new polling organization, One Poll, just did a survey of 2,000 U.S. adults, which is a pretty good sample, you know, if you really want to get a sense of what's going on. 80% of people said every day is pretty much the same as every other day. I wonder if this is like what retirement is supposed to be like. I don't know. But anyway, 59% of the people who took the survey, which is pretty amazing when you think about it, 59% said they couldn't tell what day it was. On the day the survey person called them and said, "What day is it?" they were like, "I don't know. Is it Wednesday? Is it Thursday? Is it Friday?" Well, what? 65% of people say they're struggling to stay motivated. Maybe that's like because they don't have something to be motivated to do. Having purpose in your life is such an important thing. Having a sense of mission, of purpose. You know, okay, I'm locked up in my house and I feel like I can't do anything. Well, there's a lot you can do, actually. From calling your members of Congress to getting active on social media to talking to friends and neighbors about, you know, what's going on. 75% of the people that they surveyed have given up on real clothes. That's their phrase, given up on real clothes. They spend all day, every day, sitting around in sweatpants or in their pajamas. 50%, you know, this is kind of good news. 50% are doing their best to set up an exercise routine. I've told you, Louise and I are pretty fastidious. I think there's only one day so far, you know, in the last couple of months that we've missed where, you know, we every day go out and try to walk at least 2 miles. And, you know, it's not hard where we live, you know, thank God. I realize that there are some places where it's more difficult. And for that, you know, you've got a lot of people who are buying treadmills and exercise bicycles and stuff like that. But setting up a regular exercise routine. Sadly, 36% of people, maybe not sadly, I don't know, I guess it depends on what you're eating, are using snacks as a motivator. About a third are using, 34% are using a daily to-do list that you refresh every day. 32% are asking a friend or a partner or whatever to hold them accountable. 32%. 31% are giving themselves small rewards when they finish tasks. Yeah, I think I'll clean the basement today, and when I'm done, I will, you know, fill in the blank, you know, watch a movie I wanted to watch or eat some snacks or whatever. 22% are dressing for work as if everything was normal. However, here's the danger of motivating yourself with snacks. 69%, two-thirds, a little more than two-thirds, say that they eat all their snacks well before they had originally planned. Why? 59% say because they're there, they're readily available. 48% say because I'm bored. Again, having a sense of purpose, you know, I'm going to get to writing in just a second and talk about this. 48% say boredom. 43% say it's a coping mechanism, eating snacks. 25% say it helps them relieve stress. Although as your waistline gets bigger and bigger, that in itself can be stressful. Also, you know, it can have bad health consequences. 68% would like healthier snacking. 70% say they're actually craving fresh fruits and vegetables. And 69% are trying to figure out how to get them. So there's a starting point. I mentioned writing. You know, this is something My mom graduated from MSU with a degree, magna cum laude, with a degree in English and English literature. And she was a really good writer, and she always wanted to write a novel, and she just like never quite got around to it. She had four kids, all each 2 years apart, and myself and my three younger brothers, and so she had a handful. But she instilled in me a passion for writing. My dad instilled in me a passion for reading. My dad had 20,000 books in our basement and all over our house. And I carved a bedroom out of those books downstairs. The walls of my bedroom were literally floor-to-ceiling bookcases. You know, four boys, mom and dad, in a three-bedroom house. And so I put my bedroom in the basement. And, you know, I wanted to write. I wanted to be a writer when I grew up. By the time I was 14, 15 years old, I had 50 or 60 rejection slips. I wallpapered the one cement wall that was part of the basement, actually, in my room. I wallpapered with rejection slips, mostly for terrible poetry. But over the years, I've learned some things about writing that I wanted to share with you, because I think that for many people, they would like to be keeping a diary during these times. Right now, you know, one of the more fascinating things to read are the diaries of people who lived through the pandemic, the flu pandemic in 1918, 1919. Or, I told you about this 2 weeks ago, I was reading Jonathan Edwards' diary. He was one of the Puritan preachers, and you know, the hell and brimstone preachers back in the early 1600s, when there was a smallpox epidemic. No, it was a measles epidemic. There was a measles epidemic that killed four of his kids. He had like 9 or 10 kids. And he kept a day-by-day diary where he was detailing their symptoms and how he felt about it and what his neighbors were doing and what the... So, you know, it's a nice time to keep a diary at the very least. If not for yourself, for posterity, for your kids, for your grandkids, for your great-grandkids. So how do you do that? Some lessons that I've learned from writing. Number one, whenever you're writing anything, and I do this when I write books, every single chapter, I use this little technique, and I find it very, very effective. I learned it in a copywriting seminar back in 1972. Joe Sugarman taught me this. He was one of the most highly paid copywriters, advertising copywriters in New York, and he did this seminar that I saved up for a whole year to be able to afford to go to. And he said, here's my secret. He said, when I sit down in front of the typewriter, I first think of somebody I know, somebody I like, and somebody who will have an interest in what I'm going to, in the copy that I'm going to write and what I'm going to write about. And then I start writing a letter to them. You know, dear Aunt Marge, how's Uncle Bill and the kids? You know, last week I was at the Consumer Electronics Show and I saw, and then he goes into his copy. So I've always written, and I think it's one of the reasons that, you know, people tell me anyway that my books are very, very readable. It's because I write them as letters to people, and then you tear off the introduction and throw it away, and boom, you've got your article or your book or whatever it may be. If you're writing something longer, if you're going to try and write a novel or a book or a nonfiction or whatever it may be, because this is a great time, right? Everybody wants, not everybody, but many people want to write the great American novel, or I've got a book in me. Well, here's your opportunity, number one. Then number two, don't stop at the end. When you get to a logical break point, like the end of a chapter, for example, or the end of a major thought, don't stop there. Always stop in the middle so that you're a page into the next chapter. Because if you stop at the end, then the next day you're looking at a blank page or a blank screen, and it's really hard to get started again. So, you know, a couple little tips for writing. And write every day. You know, that's what writers do. Writers write. So, but there's, you know, lots of things we can do to participate, to be active. How are you coping? How are you getting through this? I think it's, you know, it's a really interesting question.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
The right wing is pushing us into the worst case scenario of death and a bad economy. How are you pushing through it? Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. You know, this is one of those things where you don't know whether to cut Trump some slack or not. As the parent of two healthcare workers who both work in the biggest hospital in this state, I was a little shocked to hear Donald Trump say this yesterday. He's talking about doctors and nurses. He says they're running into death just like soldiers run into bullets in a true sense. I see that with the doctors and nurses and so many other people. They go into these hospitals. It's incredible to see. It's a beautiful thing to see, but I really call them warriors. We're all warriors. Everyone in our country is a warrior. Now, I get it that in his own bizarre kind of way, he's probably trying to say, these people are our heroes, and lots of us are saying that. In fact, you know, the 7 o'clock, you know, make some noise to thank our healthcare workers and the flyovers by the Blue Angels and all that. But at the same time, running into death is a beautiful thing to see. It shouldn't be. We are 4.5% of the world's population. We have a third of the world's coronavirus cases and a quarter of the world's coronavirus deaths, unnecessarily. Other kind, you know, South Korea has a total of roughly 300 dead people, total, you know, for the last 6 months, all of them. And we're at, you know, we're pushing 90,000. This is crazy. Meanwhile, just you know, one other story, or actually two stories back to back I'll share with you, and then I'll pick up your phone calls here. It being Anything Goes Friday, after all. Genevieve Peters, last week, was in a California grocery store. California, the governor, and maybe this is the city, I'm not sure, but you know, you're required, or maybe it was just the grocery store itself. I'm not all that up on the nuances of California law and exactly what the laws are in which places, but she was in a Trader Joe's, and she was required to wear a mask while in the store. And she took off the mask, and Trader Joe's called the police. And she was like, you know, all huffy and puffy, and, you know, became a little minor star on Facebook for trashing California. Well, she revealed on her Facebook page yesterday, and I quote, "Yesterday, I let you guys know I had a sore throat, and it was feeling like it was going into my lymph nodes." She says, "And the reason I posted it is because I had zero fear that I will be a statistic on the COVID-19. I'm not saying I might not get it. I might. I mean, anyone could get it, right? I mean, it's like the flu. I mean, I've had the flu many times in my life, but I've survived it. When I was feeling a little bit sick, I knew all I had to do was boost my immune system." Right. And then she goes on to talk about vitamin C, apple cider vinegar, and oregano oil. Yeah, those are going to help a lot. Actually, you know, there's some evidence that they all help your immune system, but it might be the immune system that's taking us down. I would pay attention to what our medical professionals are saying. Meanwhile, Brian Hitchens, talking to local station WPTV in Florida, says, "I thought it was the government trying something. It was kind of like they threw it out there to kind of distract us. There were all these masks and gloves. I thought it looked a lot like hysteria." So he was running around Florida with no mask, no gloves, no social distancing, nothing. And he got the coronavirus. He took it home. He gave it to his wife. They both ended up in the hospital in the intensive care unit. She is still unconscious, in a coma, on a ventilator. And so this guy who, you know, this Trump follower who believed the lies that they're telling on fake news, on Fox News, it's pronounced fake, F-A-K-E, but it's spelled F-O-X. He says, "This thing is nothing to be messed with. Please listen to the authorities and heed the advice of the experts. Looking back, I should have worn a face mask in the beginning, but I didn't. Perhaps I'm paying the price for it now, but I know that if it was me that gave it to my wife, I know she forgives me and I know that God forgives me." Really? How do you know that? Deborah in New Haven, Connecticut. You are on the air, Deborah. What's up?
I just wanted to give a little insight because this was my problem as well in terms of why the separations, why staying apart, you know, why these precautions, why leaving work. And I didn't really understand, and I can understand why others don't really understand this either, but maybe this will help. If we pretend, let's just hypothetically say that everybody stays, goes outside and just does anything they want to do. Everybody is just out. There's no precautions, with maybe the exception of gloves and a mask. If that were the case, just imagine if everybody got sick at the same time, from mild to severe. That would completely overrun our hospital system. It would completely overrun our economic. It would just be crazy. So I understand, and maybe this will help other people understand what the staggering, because it's really staggering. You know, we can't have everybody get sick at the same time. Because then, I mean, you really wouldn't get treated at a hospital. There would be so many people dying at home. It would be just a disaster. So that may give people a little bit more understanding of why it's so important to keep, one of the reasons why it's so important to keep people away from each other so that this thing does not get out of hand. What do you think, Tom?
Spot on, Deborah. You said it perfectly. And, you know, there's really kind of two issues here. Number one is the resilience of our healthcare system. And thank you, Deborah, for that. You said it so well. And of course, the other is that, you know, this is a disease that can kill you and, and shouldn't just be taken lightly. Donald Trump put in charge of the Consumer Protection Bureau a woman whose previous job was lobbying on behalf of the chemical industry. Excuse me, she was an executive in the chemical industry, a senior executive. Her name is Nancy Beck. And she is Trump's nominee for head of the U.S. Consumer Product Safety Commission. The chemical industry, you know, the Product Safety Commission certifies that products are safe. Yes, this water bottle does not contain chemicals that will cause cancer. Where do those chemicals come from? Out of the chemical industry. So this executive from the chemical industry is now in charge of that. But it gets even worse. You know that report from the CDC that got leaked and was all over the news for the last couple days that was like, here's how to open up the country. You have to do these four or five phases, and here's your benchmarks, and you have to have 14 days of declining infections before you start doing anything. You have to require everybody to wear a mask. In restaurants, you do this. In beauty shops, you do that. And, you know, they just had all these, granular suggestions. And it got deep-sixed, the exact phrase was, this will never see the light of day. It got deep-sixed in the White House by Nancy Beck, apparently, according to this reporting. This is Maria Cantwell, the senator from Washington State, calling this out, wanting to know what's going on. But Nancy Beck was the point person between the White House and the CDC. As officials at the latter, this is Laura Clausen's piece for the Daily Kos, tried to get the reopening guidelines approved, only to be told they'd never see the light of day, in quotes. The Associated Press got the emails. The CDC was saying, hey, we've got this information. This is good. This is going to help. This is going to save lives. And Beck responded repeatedly, stalling. She had, by the way, previously lobbied against protecting, this is from Laura Clausen's reporting, Beck had previously lobbied against protecting people from toxins if those toxins were profitable to the chemical industry. Then she went to the EPA's Office of Chemical Safety and Pollution Prevention, where she worked to weaken or block Obama-era protections on things like what killed my father, asbestos. Isn't that sweet? Meanwhile, a fourth U.S. Department of Agriculture meat inspector has died from coronavirus. This was yesterday in Dodge City, Kansas. As of Tuesday of this week, 123 U.S. Department of Agriculture Food Safety and Inspection Service employees are under self-quarantine. Another 171 are absent from work because they have been diagnosed with COVID-19. 30 meat workers have died. An estimated 10,000 plus have become infected. And Trump issues an executive order on April 28th saying, if you work at a meat packing plant, you have to go back to work. Well, some people are talking about hazardous duty pay. I was thinking about this the other day. Hazardous duty pay. If you're an employer and you're asking somebody to go into a workplace where they're regularly having contact with the public, which is hazardous, period. You know, a clerk in a store, anybody works in any retail establishment. Or as things open up, you know, hairdressers, or you just fill in the blanks, right? You know what I'm talking about, dangerous professions. What is appropriate hazardous duty pay? Kroger's was paying an extra $2 an hour to their workers who were making between $12 and $15 an hour, depending on who they were, how long they'd been there. Kroger was giving them $2 extra in hazardous duty pay. And now they're winding that down, according to Judd Legum, because the emergency's over now, according to President Trump. But I remember back when my dad was negotiating with the machinists union for his little shop. I mean, he didn't own it. He was the office manager, and he ran a couple of the machines. It was a tool and die shop. Lansing Tool and Die was the name of the company. And they negotiated a deal where if you worked more than a 40-hour week, then you were into that hazardous area where you're putting your home life at risk and you're risking exhaustion and all kinds of things. And so they got time and a half. And in fact, time and a half was like normal through all the unionized industries in Michigan when I was growing up, when I was a kid. If you worked more than 40 hours a week, you got time and a half. So let's extend that logic. Now, that's long gone, right? I mean, you know, virtually nobody is unionized in the United States, and I think there's very, very few people who get time and a half for anything anymore. But if you're trying to come up with hazardous duty pay for these folks who are putting their lives on the lines and large numbers of them dying, shouldn't it be time and a half? I mean, I'm just saying, you know, you want a benchmark? It's already established. We don't need to invent something new. For the 40 years that America was unionized, you know, from the 1940s to the 1980s, the fastest, strongest growth of the American middle class in history, that was one of our metrics. Probably still is for a lot of, you know, well-unionized big city police forces and things like that, maybe fire departments. But anyway, just a thought. And meanwhile, the Supreme Court's in Wisconsin, on a 4-3 partisan vote, struck down Governor Tony Evers' stay-at-home restrictions. It's getting weird out there.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
The Republican Party has officially relabeled itself the Party of Death. I mean, that's kind of officially what they're all about.
We like death.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So, what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Barbara in Sun City, Arizona. Hey, Barbara, what's up?
This is really being underreported. I do want to put out a website that is toosoonarizona.com that Governor Ducey opened the state up to everything. Casinos, water parks, bars are shoulder to shoulder with kids. The seniors are having little gatherings. They have opened the state up completely, and nobody's talking about this. He did it after Trump came. The next day, he said, I'm abandoning the plans to keep the state, you know, under the rules, and now everybody's free to do whatever they want, the restaurants. And it's absurd. I mean, it's scary, so scary. And we've got toosoonarizona.com.
And, I'm looking at it right now. You've got this long list of Arizona businesses who signed on to this open letter, a letter from small business owners regarding reopening Arizona. We are united in our decision to not reopen our dining rooms and shops to the public
right.
at this time. It's just too soon. And there's all these hundreds of signatures.
12,000 deaths, and not 12,000 deaths, 12,000 people sick and over 600 deaths. And it's going up, and the Navajo Nation is in a crisis.
Yes, they are. They are.
You need to repeat this every day to help the state. I mean, SOS, Save Our State. It's insane. I'm scared. I'm 67. I'm a senior. I'm in my house. And I'm just like, get the supplies and not go anywhere.
Yeah. Well, we all need to be careful, Barbara. Yeah, you're right. And you and I and many other people are in that vulnerable, super vulnerable window. Thank you for the call. But I think the larger point, we're trying to get Amy Vanderpool back on to talk about what it's like being a relatively young person, a person in your 30s or 40s or even 20s who gets this and gets knocked down. I have a couple of friends who got COVID down in Texas, and it really just beat the crap out of them. And, you know, these are young, healthy people. It's a tough time. Raul in Visalia, California.
I heard some of the scientists speak about the possibility of a dark winter with this pandemic. And I think while we know what's happening with the meat plants across this country at this particular point, we have over 34,000 food processing and juice plants across the United States. In California, we have 5,500 alone. And these particular plants are governed by very loose, discretionary-type Cal-OSHA regulations. There's nothing there in terms of strict pandemic standards or any type of procedures for monitoring. So I think that's leaving ourselves open for significant problems. I think it's going to overwhelm people of color, but eventually it's going to permeate into the general community. So I think we need to be very, very concerned here. And not even progressive states like California have come up with some very stringent, I think, standards for requiring work plans and for monitoring these issues.
Yeah, this is serious stuff. Raul, I'm with you. You know, and Trump is just making it worse by ending his state of emergency and saying to the states and saying to the yahoos who listen to him, you know, oh, it's fine. Don't worry. Go back. It's only going to kill black people. Don't worry.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Dr. Rick Bright, the guy who is in charge of coming up with vaccines for the United States, who got bounced out of his position because he was not enthusiastic about hydroxychloroquine, which it turns out two studies from the Veterans Administration. Why are they doing studies on our vets? Oh, good question. But anyhow, they made guinea pigs out of a bunch of veterans. And what they discovered is if you give people, when they've got coronavirus, if you give them chloroquine or hydroxychloroquine, they have heart attacks, which we've known all along. It's one of the known side effects of hydroxychloroquine. They're more likely to die, not less likely to die. But anyhow, so that's why he got kicked out of his job. But Congressman John Sarbanes of Maryland, one of the Democrats who represents Maryland in the U.S. House of Representatives, elicited from Dr. Bright probably the number one one-liner of the entire thing. It does have the S word in it, which I'm going to attempt to bleep or cover up or something, but here's the clip.
In January of this year, tell me about just one specific moment when you had that sinking feeling in the pit of your stomach because you were not seeing the response that you knew needed to happen.
Congressman, I'll never forget the emails I received from Mike Bowen and indicating that our mask supply, or N95 respirator supply, was completely decimated. And he said, we're in deep. The world is, and we need to act. And I pushed that forward to the highest levels I could in HHS and got no response. From that moment, I knew that we were going to have a crisis for our healthcare workers because we were not taking action. We were already behind the ball. That was our last window of opportunity to turn on that production to save the lives of those healthcare workers. And we didn't act.
And we didn't act. And this is the guy that this administration fires or demotes. And then you get this idiot from Oklahoma, this Republican congressman from Oklahoma, Mark Wayne is his first name, Mark Wayne Mullins. And he's a former plumber and right-wing talk show host, following in the footsteps of Joe the Plumber, no doubt. And his question, why are you on sick leave right now? Well, I have high blood pressure and I have some sick time accrued, and I've been kicked out of my regular job and put into a job that I really, you know, don't want to be doing. I mean, that's not literally what Dr. Bright said, but it's the essence. And so then Mullen starts asking him about his medication. I mean, it was just, this was obscene. Of course, Mullen is now getting trashed on Twitter for being such an ass, frankly, but phew, boy, what a day, huh? Chris in Seattle. Hey, Chris, what's on your mind today? Thanks for watching us on Facebook Live. What's up?
Hey, Tom. Usually I'm a very upbeat guy, and I don't think that, though, there is going to be a recovery here. I think it's intentional. Not that they intentionally made the virus, but Trump's response in chaos, you can, all the things that they're doing, the people aren't paying attention to because all of their focus is on corona. And they're right. Literally just getting away with crimes back there. I truly do not believe in any way, shape, or form that there will be an election in November. There just can't. There's no way this guy is ever going to leave office with all of the confusion. I think that they really want a second wave, and I know that's starting to kind of get into conspiracy theory, but if the second wave of the Spanish flu hit 50 million people. Now, we, of course, have better, you know, medicine now, but even if it only kills 25 to 30 million people, well, how many people are unemployed right now?
Let me give you a scenario, Chris, that, I mean, you're saying this is a conspiracy theory. Let's just extend that logic. If I'm a Republican strategist right now, and I'm looking at the election of November 2020, and I'm looking at the statistics that were published 2 days ago that found, and I believe this was, I'm sorry, I don't have it in front of me, but I believe it was a Gallup poll. It was one of the big polling organizations. And what they found was, and I'm sorry, I don't remember the exact numbers off the top of my head, so these numbers are remembered guesstimates, but you can look it up. It's this is no secret. Sure. It's widely reported. That among Democrats, some number in the high 70s, the number that sticks in my head was 79% of Democrats, feel uncomfortable leaving their home right now. And among Republicans, it was like 35%, 38%, something like that. It was in the 30s, as I recall, who are uncomfortable leaving home right now. Because so many Republicans are getting their news from Fox News and right-wing hate radio, where, yeah, those hosts are doing their shows from home. Limbaugh is doing a show from home. Fox News people are all doing their shows from home. Fox won't even reopen their offices until June 15th. But they're telling their listeners and their viewers, it's all good. Go back. And so who's going to show up to vote in person in states like Texas where you literally can't get an absentee ballot without a doctor's slip?
That's just crazy. It's
yeah.
crazy.
You know, the Democrats are not going to show up to vote. This is what they're betting on. Democrats will be afraid of getting
Absolutely.
Sick and they won't show up to vote. Republicans, they're brave. They don't think it's a big problem. They know it only hits black people and old people, and they're not black or old, so they're going to show up and vote. And that was, by the way, that was the bet that they made in Wisconsin when the Wisconsin Supreme Court or the U.S. Supreme Court actually backed them up. Both Supreme Courts said this election has to go forward. Both Supreme Courts run by Republicans. And I'm convinced in both cases, their logic was, the Republicans will show up because they don't believe it's a big deal, and the Democrats will stay home because they're scared. And I think that, you know, if there's a second wave, and there almost certainly will be, Chris, if that second wave really starts to crest in October, November, that they're betting that even more Democrats will be afraid to go out. What do you think?
I believe that absolutely. I think it's by design. Putin's plan was always to bankrupt us in the first place. This just helped to speed it up.
It is. This is pick your autocrat who doesn't like the United States. You know, Xi of China, Putin of Russia. They're getting what they want. James in Chicago. Hey, James, what's up?
Hey, how you doing, Tom? I'm just calling, give my little two cents. I haven't talked to you in a while. You know, I had a family member who fell victim to the coronavirus, unfortunately.
Oh, no.
So I'm going through some changes with that. Yeah, my son had contracted the virus, and we took him to the hospital, and they didn't keep him. They sent him home and put him under quarantine. But, you know, for a couple of weeks, he felt like he was going to die. He was crying. He was miserable. He was depressed, you know how we felt too, so we did everything. And so, thankfully, he came out of it. He's back to work, and everybody's doing fine so far. So, you know, I just want
That's
to
good news.
Offer my piece on that. Other than that, we're just coping. The things I've done, I've retired from my job back in February, but I got a little part-time job at Home Depot, and I'm doing a little odds and ends around the house to keep busy. And we on the weekend, we'll take like a Saturday drive because you can't do anything else, you know. So, but this is crazy, yeah. I'm telling you, man. So that's all I want to do today as far as that's concerned.
Yeah, it's a good one, James. And so you're finding ways to cope. I mean, yesterday Louise and I we wanted to splurge and have a, you know, instead of making food at home, have a restaurant meal. But instead of having it delivered, we drove all the way across town to go pick it up and took the most scenic slow route we could find just to get out of the house. But you know, and you know, just picked it up from, it was an Ethiopian restaurant here in town that just does great food. People are like, these things that, you know, we never would have thought of as being a big event and having a lot of meaning are suddenly very meaningful.
Yes, they are. And do you know that mentioning eating out, I've eaten out twice since this thing started. I've eaten French fries from McDonald's twice. I just haven't done it. But you know, I'll pass the Portillo's and I'll see 40 cars in the drive up trying to get to. You know, so it's really been something, you know. But I don't have a whole lot of political comment right now, buddy. But that's, I just want to express my thoughts on this coronavirus.
Okay, well, thank you, James, and glad to hear that your son is well. Thank you so much for the call, and thanks for listening to WCPT. William in Hampton, New Jersey. Hey, William, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom, how's it going? I'm an essential worker, 41 years old. And I've been working the last 4 weeks. And I just wanted to let you know and your listeners know that more and more people are venturing out. And a lot of them don't wear face masks. And, you know, I have a very grim outlook on this whole thing. And I won't share that with everyone. But I think a second wave is inevitable. And I'm hoping I'm wrong. And it just scares me. And I have a family I have to go home to every night. And I think my risk at my job is pretty low, but, you know, there's always that fear, and I fear for everyone because a lot of people are going out ignoring rules, and it's really scary. I wanted to get your thoughts on the second wave. And just one thing before I get off is I saw a news article about lawmakers, Republican lawmakers in Louisiana, who voted by mail to restrict voting by mail in that state. And I don't know if you saw that or mentioned that on the show earlier.
No, I didn't. I didn't,
yeah,
but
and
I'm not surprised.
And here in New Jersey, some of the Republican lawmakers are suggesting to have an open debate on opening up our state. And the way they want to have this open debate is through virtual meeting online, not in person.
Right. Well, it's like the Wisconsin Supreme Court that got together and decided, you know, that Tony Evers, the governor's stay-at-home order, was invalid, but they did it by Zoom, right? I mean, it's like,
right.
It's really? It's absolutely crazy. But as to
your,
your
thoughts on a second wave, and I listen to you every day, Tom, and thanks for what you do. Have a good day.
Thank you, William. Yeah, you too. Have a good one. Here are my thoughts on that. Donald Trump is bringing us the very worst of both worlds. We've got this economic meltdown that's happening right now. And then you've got the coronavirus, which is the trigger, arguably, that is causing the economic meltdown. Now, we all knew that our economic system was very, very fragile and, you know, kind of held together with baling wire and bubble gum. To begin with, that after the 2009 crisis or 2008 crisis, it really wasn't put back together properly. We never undid the damage the structural damage to our economy that was done back in the late 90s when Glass-Steagall was repealed. I think that was 99. And so, you know, you've got big banks that are repeatedly coming to the Fed, coming to us, and saying, bail us out while we continue giving, you know, billions of dollars in bonuses and pay to our shareholders and to our CEOs and whatnot. So, you know, the system structurally is broken. But then on top of that, the thing that is driving the crisis right now is the fact that people are afraid to come out and afraid to go to work and in some places literally can't by law. And that's the one thing that is holding deaths as low as they are. And keep in mind, we have the most deaths in the world, right? I mean, you know, we're closing in on 90,000 dead people. You know, within a week or so, we're going to have 100,000 dead Americans. And the curve has been flattened. In fact, I would say here in Oregon, for example, the curve has been squashed. I think we had something like 70 new cases yesterday statewide, two or three deaths. They were all people in their 80s. It's still burning through the nursing homes here. But that's largely it. And it's under control because we locked down way back in early March. But now Oregon is starting to open back up. We've got three or four counties that are not, including Multnomah, where Portland is. We're not quite ready yet. But the rest of the state is opening up. States all over the country are opening back up. And predictably, there's going to be a second wave because we don't have widespread testing available. We aren't doing contact tracing. So when you get just a couple of super spreaders, you get a couple of people who are asymptomatic, but they're shedding virus like crazy, and they go into events with lots and lots of people, and which is how this all started in New York, right? You had this one guy who had been overseas. He came back, and he went to a couple of events, high population events, and spread the virus like crazy, not realizing it, because there was no testing, and there's no testing now. So I think that, Donald Trump thinks he's going to get the economy back in shape. I think what we're going to see, and the test on this, by the way, is going to be how the media reports this. What we're going to see is a second wave that's going to be just devastating. I'm very concerned about that. Judd in Tyler, Texas. Hey, Judd, what's up?
Hey, Tom. First off, your show to me is like Radio Free Europe in the land of Louis Gohmert, and I really appreciate it.
Thank you, John.
I wanted to tell you that I've said something else to your screener, but I think that the initial thought on this virus was that when warmer weather came around that it was going to disappear. But it seems that it's really spreading like wildfire. Southeast Asia and other places, but right. So I think we can kind of throw that out the window. But what I told your screener is that I'm sort of like I'm a lefty in East Texas, and so I'm kind of a weirdo. But the things that I hear from my friends and the people that I work with are they're really disheartening, man. Because it's a complete lack of critical thinking. And they're falling for just about anything that they find on Facebook. For example, Hillary's eating babies. And I think you had a caller a couple of weeks ago that mentioned this woman's name in this viral video. And it's all conspiracy.
Are you talking the plandemic thing?
Yeah. The pandemic or the I'm not
there's a really good video up, by the way. I shared it with a friend of mine yesterday who had seen Plandemic and thought that there was something to it. There's a doc, I think he's in New York, and he it's an hour long video, and he literally takes that Plandemic video that put together by this crazy conspiracy lady and takes it step by step by step, every single argument that's made in it, and dissects it. It's brilliant.
Right. And hey, Tom, I also wanted to tell you real quick, not all the truck drivers out here are MAGA hats. So I'm part of the truck driving group, and I love your show, man. It gets me through the day.
Okay. Thank you, Judd. It's great to hear you, and thank you for you're welcome. Thanks for your kind words. And in a way, Judd has more of an opportunity than many of us because he knows MAGA hat folks. He knows the Trump folks, understands them, interacts with them, speaks their language. And, that's a golden opportunity to just spread a little doubt here and there, right? You don't need to go in, let's have a war. It's not necessary. Let's just, really, did Trump actually just say that? Those kinds of things. Quick math. The less your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. With higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR, all into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required. It's accessible from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. You improve efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math. See how you'll profit with NetSuite. By popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/Hartman with two N's. netsuite.com/Hartman. That's netsuite.com/Hartman. And welcome back. Mikey in Seattle, Washington. Hey, Mikey, what's up?
First time caller. A little nervous. I want to say I really respect Richard Wolff. I have ADD, and your book has been a great help. My licensed nurse practitioner has me on a, can I say?
Sure.
The gabapentin. I'm on Medicare, and it's affordable. I've got a scenario for you. Me and seven or eight poor, hardworking Americans have an audience with the President Trump. We have one African American, one Native American, one Asian American, one Muslim American, one Christian American, and a couple randomly chosen poor, hardworking Americans. All parties are allowed to speak. I approach a podium and remind the President that all of us have family members that have fought and died for democracy, for this country. I have one question. I'd like to know if the President can look any of my friends in the eye. That's all. That's all I have.
Okay. Mikey, it's, I get your voice, and I get how, what a challenge that is. Mikey, thank you very much. It's, you know, there are many of us who are, you know, I think experiencing something between rage and despair over this situation and how bad it is. Mikey, thanks for the call. That was a brave thing you did. Steve in Topanga, California. Hey, Steve. Thanks for watching.
Hey, morning, Tom. I'm thinking that the House should be more on a war footing, and the Democrats need to hang tough on this new stimulus bill. You know, they got to stop playing patty cake with the Senate. You know, we got people dying all over the place. They're going to keep dying. And, you know, I've said it before on your show, is that I think no deal is better than bad deal, because then Trump can take that right into the election. And the most important thing is that Trump gets unelected. You know, we are in a fascist state. We've been there for a while. And the one bright outlook for me is my girlfriend's in Australia. She's Australian. And they're doing it right. And they can be an example for everybody of how both sides, Labor and conservatives, are working together to solve the problem. And there is some optimism out there. But really, our Democrats are not stepping up and really trying to protect us. And I really think no deal is better than a bad deal. Let Trump take that to the election. And I just want to know what you thought about it. I'll take my answer off.
Well, it's a delicate political calculus, Steve, because if you do no deal as opposed to a bad deal, then Trump gets to say you're do-nothing Democrats, which is his favorite phrase. He's reviving Harry Truman's do-nothing Republicans, which Harry Truman rode to victory in 1948. But there's that political calculus. And Australia, yeah, they're doing it right. They've got a national healthcare system. Anybody can get tested. They're led by an evangelical right-wing Christian, and he's on board with all this stuff. Thank you, Steve.
Tom Hartman here. Everybody knows about the war that billionaire oligarchs and giant corporations have waged against working-class Americans since the Reagan Revolution. But there's a big piece of that most Americans don't know. It has to do with a racist guy named Robert Bork, who convinced Congress and the Supreme Court to change our laws about monopolies. You can read all about it in my new book, The Hidden History of American Monopoly, available for pre-sale right now, wherever fine books are sold.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Katie in Hudson, Massachusetts. Hey, Katie, what's on your mind today?
I just wanted to pass this along, and maybe someone else will use this as well. I have decided that when I see someone in a store or in a situation, and I feel compelled, now I try not to, you know, make comments or think badly about people that are not wearing their masks when I am trying to do my best and take care of myself. I've decided if I feel compelled to say anything to them at all, it'll be, oh, I see you're following the TTH plan, and that's thinning the herd plan, because they're the ones that are going to suffer from their ignorance and, you know, ridiculous actions of not wearing the mask. They'll catch it first, and, you know, hopefully they'll survive, you know, but that will be the thing.
Yeah, the problem is that you don't want to engage those people in conversation. I don't know if you saw the thing in the, it was in the New York Times yesterday, I'm assuming it was all over the media, that they've found now that one of the things that causes us to expel unusually large numbers of droplets that can hang out in the air, you know, with several feet around us for up to 8 minutes, is talking.
I agree. You know, well, I just would be saying it probably talking. From a distance.
yeah. I've been trying to figure out.
You know, just I try not to think badly, and I try not to engage. But if I feel someone is being arrogant about not wearing their mask, and they're in a situation where, you know, looking at me like I'm a weirdo because I'm wearing mine, that's what I'm going to say is, I'm going to say, well, you're thinning the herd.
yeah, that's a good one. And let me just toss the door open to anybody who has, other suggestions. Because one of the things, typically when people are confronted, they tend to dig in. Even when they know they're wrong, they tend to dig in. But if they don't feel confronted, there are ways to get the message to them. And the question in my mind is kind of twofold. Number one, what is the message? And then number two, what's the most effective way to convey it? I used to, for example, when I'd get, this has been a decade now since these debates were going on, but back years ago when these right-wingers, these homophobes would come on my show and start ranting about gay people and gay marriage and whatnot, I would simply point out to them that I find it unusual that, you know, anybody would sit around thinking about gay people all the time. Are they actually secretly gay? And for a large percentage of those people, they would just suddenly shut up and go, whoa. Because I think that was a thing. The gun nuts, you know, I'll make a comment about, well, you know, maybe a certain percentage of these people are just, you know, really trying to compensate for inadequate or what they think is inadequate penis size, you know, and therefore they're walking around with big guns.
And you can also tell them that you're wearing the mask for them and I'm wearing the mask
right,
for everybody
yeah.
else.
Yeah, you know? But it's like I'm reluctant to, because Louise and I encounter these people all the time when we're out walking, and some of them, sometimes people go out of their way to give you space, and then there's other people who literally just try to walk right up next to you, and or by you, you know, as you're walking on the sidewalk, and I have not figured out something to say that would be fast, that would be snappy. That wouldn't require a response, because I don't want to engage people. If they're that either stupid or buried in the right-wing talking points of hate radio and Fox News, that means that they've been engaging in risky behavior, and they're more likely to actually be infected. And so, I mean, we drove by there's a liquor store a couple blocks from our house, and we drove by that yesterday on our way out to this Ethiopian restaurant to get lunch. And there was like this long line of people outside. None of them had masks on, and they weren't standing 6 feet apart. And I'm like, whoa, you know what? How do you communicate to people how dangerous that is? I'm still struggling with it. But, you know, thinning the herd. You're one of the thin the herders. I get it. Maybe there's something that we could print on our masks. I mean, collectively, maybe we can come up with something. Anyhow, Katie, I got to run. Thank you for the call. Jessica, we have a minute to the end of this hour. What's up?
Oh, so the idiot Trump is so evil, the U.S. is deporting coronavirus. They're sending back migrants to Guatemala and Haiti, and ICE tells them that ICE gives them a certificate that they're healthy, and then they test positive for coronavirus when they get there. And these countries don't have enough ventilators, enough beds. They don't have the hospital system to support this pandemic, and the idiot just wants to spread it all over the world.
Yeah, I'm not sure that he intentionally wants to spread it, but although, hey, you know, it's Stephen Miller. He hates people of color, and that's who you're talking about here, Jessica. And so, hey, let's throw some coronavirus into their country. We are the center of the world for it, after all. It is very unfortunate. And I heard that it was 3 or 4 days ago there was a story about how Trump was planning on deporting Haitians who were infected. The next day I saw a story that they had temporarily postponed that. I don't know if it's back on or not, but it's despicable. Marilyn in Sun City, Arizona. Hey, Marilyn, what's on your mind today?
Hi, Tom. You were talking the other day about Republicans being comfortable leaving their homes. And, you know, I'm a blue dot in a red state. I'm actually up in Canada right now where I feel completely safe, safer than I've ever felt down in Arizona. But, while my daughter's having a baby, my husband wasn't able to come with me because he's a U.S. citizen and I have dual citizenship. So anyway, why I'm calling is I don't think, and I have made my Republican friends a little bit more uncomfortable about leaving their homes because I don't think we're reading the numbers correctly. So we have about 1.4 million total cases in the United States, but 1.0 million roughly are still sick. Those are active cases. We don't know how they'll turn out, if they'll live or if they'll die, right? Those are still sick active cases. 400,000 of them are closed cases. They've had a finality either of death or of recovery. So of those 400,000 that are closed cases, they've had the virus and had an outcome. 318,000 recovered and 87,000 died. That's telling me that there's really a 30% death rate. We don't know about the 1 million. We don't know about the 1 million that are still sick because they're still sick. We don't know how many will live or how many will die. But of the ones that have had an outcome, which are closed cases, of those 400,000, so 312 or 18,000 or whatever have recovered totally and they no longer have the virus, the other 87,000 died.
I got the math. Why are those? I mean, if you look at the countries that were ahead of us, that had these diseases first, and so therefore have higher numbers of people who have either died or recovered, they've resolved the infection one way or the other. Look at Italy, look at Spain, look at China. In those countries, you're not seeing anything close to a 30% death rate.
Actually, if you look worldwide at the if you look at the worldwide, and I go to Worldometer, which I find quite reliable, worldwide you are finding a 20 to 30% death rate of the closed cases. I've been telling my Republican friends is that if you get the virus, if you don't get it, you're fine. But if you get the virus, you have a 1 in 4 chance of not making it. And I live in a retirement community of 30,000 people all over the age of 55.
Wow. The other point is that would probably drastically alter these statistics, is that the people, by and large, in the United States, and probably in most other countries as well, who we know had COVID-19 or have COVID-19, are people who showed bad enough symptoms to show up someplace and get tested. And there are some indications that as few as 15% or as many as 40% of people who are infected with this never realize that they have COVID. They have such mild symptoms, they think they have a cold, or they have no symptoms at all, and particularly younger people. So that's got to be skewing the numbers, too. Marilyn, I think, you know, a year from now, we'll be looking back on some pretty good epidemiology. But right now, there's a lot of questions, and you just raised a huge one. Thank you. Thank you for that. I'm going to have to dig into some numbers myself. I appreciate the call. Debbie in Sylvania, Ohio. Hey, Debbie, what's on your mind today?
First, let me say I'm a retired teacher, and I love your show. I learned so much. But I called about the lady with the mask issue and confronting people. I'm not really comfortable confronting people because you don't know exactly what you're going to trigger. But I have ordered, I haven't been out a whole lot, except to walk the dog. But Ohio's reopening, and our governor has backed away from requiring masks. So I have ordered a T-shirt and mask that says, "My mask protects my community." And I realize that's very subtle, but I think it would carry the message to, you know, people who are open to it without the risk of, like you're saying, with the germs being spewed from talking, but just also you don't really know who you're talking to when you're saying you should be wearing a mask, and it might be an idea. I know you can find them online. There is one company, I'm not associated with it, but you might have heard of it, Ray Gun. They do make their products in the United States, and I believe it's mostly union labor.
Uh-huh. And they make these T-shirts?
And the masks that say, my mask protects my community or my you. I mean, I think they have a variety of things and
like
T-shirts.
Tell me how to find this website or this company.
Ray Gun is just RayGun, and I think it's probably .com. I'm not positive, but like I say, I'm not associated with them, but
engine.
We know they have tons and tons of things like America Needs Public Schools, America Needs Teachers, you know, America Needs Journalists.
How cool.
They have a variety of those kind of products.
It's Ray Gunn, like Ronnie Ray Gunn, what we used to call Reagan back in the days, you know.
I forgot.
I wonder
about
if that's
that.
when they got started. That's fascinating.
Thanks for that. That's a good question. That's a good question. Thanks so much for your program. Really enjoy it.
Thank you, Debbie. Thanks for the call, and thanks for watching us on YouTube. I love that. My mask protects my community or our community. That's marvelous. It's not confrontational. It's subtle. I love it. Tom Harbin here with you. Wanted to just lay out this one of my big concerns. I just mentioned to a caller a minute ago, you know, the Democrats are putting forward this $3 trillion bill. Frankly, what they keep doing, and we saw the same thing in the Obamacare negotiations, we've seen it over and over and over again with Democrats, is, you know, they keep assuming that Republicans are going to be reasonable. And so they come up with legislation that they say, you know, here's a reasonable compromise. You know, we'll fund COBRA instead of Medicare for All, for example, even though COBRA is absurdly more expensive. But hey, it's going to pass some money along to the insurance companies, and they're big funders of not only some of the Democrats, but most of the Republicans. So, you know, we'll do that. We'll give you that. What they should have done is they should have said, we want it all. We want a $6 trillion piece of legislation. We want Medicare for every single American in the United States starting tomorrow morning. We want what Australia is doing, $3,000 for every person. You know, no conditions, no catches, no gotchas. We want that now. And then let them negotiate back to a midpoint, because what they're going to have to do now that they put this $3 trillion bill is now they're going to have to negotiate with Mitch McConnell. He's going to whittle it down to $2 trillion or $1 trillion or less than that. And, you know, it's really unfortunate. At the same time, look at what's going on in the Labor Department. This is mind-boggling. You know, Donald Trump put Antonin Scalia's son, Eugene, in charge of the Labor Department. Antonin Scalia, of course, died, when he was in the Supreme Court in that, shoot the penned animals resort down in Texas sometime back. But his son is a lawyer who has been working against organized labor most of his life. And, you know, a strong opponent of organized labor, Eugene Scalia, he is now in charge of the Labor Department. I mean, this is what Reagan did. Reagan put a guy in charge of the Labor Department, the first head of the Labor Department ever who didn't believe in organized labor. You know, Trump obviously doing the same thing. And now Scalia's Labor Department is advising the states that if people are unwilling to come back to work because they think that their workplace is not safe from the coronavirus, the states should rat them out and pull their unemployment benefits. The memo from the Labor Department says, and I quote, "States are encouraged to request employers to provide information when workers refuse to return to their jobs for reasons that do not support their continued eligibility for benefits," end quote. Trump is determined to get the economy open again before the election, even if it kills America's working people. Donald Trump doesn't care about anybody's life except his own, and never has. And frankly, I'm strongly of the opinion that that's true of basically the entire Republican Party. Sociopaths, only sociopaths need apply, right, to become Republican elected officials. It's really mind-boggling. Prior to the pandemic, Jessica Glenza, writing over at Microsoft News, MSN.com, prior to the pandemic, 160 million Americans, roughly half our population, got their medical insurance through their jobs. Now, 30 million Americans have lost their jobs. Presumably, you know, if half of them or a little more than half of them got their employment, their health insurance through their employment, now that they're unemployed, you've got, you know, probably somewhere between 50 and 20 million Americans who no longer have, insurance, health insurance. You know, the best estimates, the Urban Institute and the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation did the math on this, and it's fairly complex. And what they found is that anywhere from 25 to 43 million Americans could lose their health insurance over the next month or so as a result of this recession. And it's worse, it's far worse in Republican-led states than in blue states where Medicaid has been expanded. So let's just expand Medicare. Let's lower the eligibility age to zero for any family that has had an unemployment claim verified. Any family that is drawing unemployment benefits right now should be eligible. When you are eligible for unemployment, you are eligible for Medicare. Let's just do this. Do it very straightforward, very clean, you know, no need to mess around. Just lay it out. So there's that. Meanwhile, Donald Trump is hiding this coronavirus task force report. This came out on May 7th, back last week, last Thursday. And it says that the top 10 areas where we're seeing an increase in coronaviruses in the United States recorded surges of 72.4% over that seven-day period. That includes Nashville, Tennessee, Des Moines, Iowa, Amarillo, Texas, 650% increase in Central City, Kentucky, Charlotte, North Carolina, Kansas City, Missouri, Omaha and Lincoln, Nebraska, Minneapolis, Montgomery, Alabama, Columbus, Ohio, and Phoenix, Arizona. Just Charlotte and Kansas City, 200% increases in coronavirus. Yet Trump is saying, everything's good, it's magically going to go away, don't worry, summer's coming, it's going to be gone, just like the cold and the flu, get back to work. And then when the report came out, the Trump administration said, no, we're not going to release that report, we're going to deep six that report. I'm telling you, they don't care about the lives of Americans. They genuinely don't. It, you know, Stalin said one death is a tragedy, a million deaths is a statistic. Trump is making that his mantra.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.